Hello and welcome to the Occult London podcast. This is a new podcast dedicated to exploring magic, mysticism, the Kabbalah, as well as other topics of interest in relation to the Western esoteric tradition. This is the second episode of a series exploring different concepts in relation to the Kabbalistic tree of life from a Western esoteric perspective. I am your host, Will, and I will be acting as your guide on this journey. I'm not purporting to be an expert in these broadcasts, but rather a student like you. And this is a project for me to learn as much as you hopefully are learning. If you like the podcast, please make sure to visit our website. The link is in the show notes, and you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes as well. So anyway, I hope you enjoy the show, and let's continue. So the first thing that we're going to talk about in this second episode is the three veils of negative existence, which is the beginnings of the Kabbalistic tree of life. And this is also known as the Ein Sof Hour. If we look at the Zohar, it has the following description of this particular thing. The most secret of mysteries is that which is called nothing, the most holy ancient from whom the light flows forth. So as we discussed in our introduction to the Tree of Life, there are considered to be four planes of manifestation and three planes of unmanifestation or negative existence. And these actually lie behind the tree. So they are very much what the tree emerges from. The first of these is called the Ein, which stands for negative existence or non-manifestation. And this is the unmanifest, illimitable source, and is the source from which all things come from. And this is what Will Parfit, who is one of the first authors I actually read when I started getting into the Kabbalah, calls this the nothing. This is where the symbol is simply nothingness. Incomprehensible, but also you could look at it from the point of view of universal spirit. The second one is known as the Ein Sof, which is the limitless, and this has been described as nothing becomes a vastness of potentiality and interstellar space, but it also can be looked at as universal will. So this is also what Blavatsky has called the great breath, profoundly unknowable to itself. So this is that first will to create. Then the third veil is known as the Ein Sof Or, which is the limitless light, but also the divisible, the beginnings of limitation. Nothing is also can be seen as the universal love. So there's the will, and then there's the love, and then there's that primal bit at the beginning, the kind of universal spirit. So in the end, this process is essentially, you know, limitless or eternal light that creates the universe. And you know, this does have some relevance in terms of Einstein's theory of relativity. So if you look at traveling at the speed of light, then you would experience yourself to be in all places at the same time. And that idea of a timeless space, which is limitless, is very much what you could describe as being the eternal moment, but also the Ein Sof Or. So, I mean, it's out of these three planes of negative existence that the first Sefer Keter is concentrated, and so it begins the beginning of the tree through the descent of the divine light. Crowley explains this in his essay Kabbalistic Dogma, when he said the following: first is nothing, or the absence of things, Ein, which does not and cannot mean negatively existing, if such an idea can be said to mean anything. Second is without limit, Ein Sof, i.e. infinite space. This is the primal dualism of infinity, the infinitely small and the infinitely great. The clash of these produces a finite positive idea which happens to be light. This word, R, is most important. It symbolizes the universe immediately after chaos, the confusion or clash of the infinite opposites. Aleph is the egg of matter, Yod is the torus, the bull, or energy motion, and Resh is the sun, or organized and moving systems of orbs. The three letters of Ein thus repeat the three ideas. So these veils in a sense, represent, you know, pre-existence or the state of things before they make their initial manifestation in Keter. And this is why the tree is also known as the robe of Ain. They're also significant if we consider the three pillars of the tree as being lower manifestations of the higher forces from beyond the tree. Israel Regardi, who I think people are probably quite familiar with from the Golden Dawn fame, has some interesting concepts on this when he says that the Ein Sof is neither spirit nor will, but rather the underlying condition or material for both, as well as being the ultimate cause of matter and force. And this is what Regardi calls the cyclic law, or the will to manifest. So this law essentially states that the light Ein is normally in a state of quiescence, moving in a constant circle like the Ouroboros. However, occasionally it becomes polarized into spirit and matter, and the result of this is the infinite light of Keter. Dion Fortune also talks about this as well when she said the following: "The unmanifest is pure existence. We cannot say of it that it is not. Although it is not manifest, it is. It is the source from which all arises. It is the only reality. It alone is substance. It alone is stable. All else is an appearance and a becoming. Of this manifest, we can only say, it is. It is the verb to be turned back upon itself. It is a state of pure being without qualities and without history." And that's from the Cosmic Doctrine, if anyone is interested in having a read of that. She also goes on to say the following, which is also relevant: "They are algebraic symbols that enable us to think of that which transcends thought and which at the same time hide that which they represent. They are the masks of transcendent realities. If we think of the states of negative existence in terms of anything that we know, we shall err." So what she's really saying is that there isn't really any easy way of describing or imagining these negative states of existence, because there isn't any forms that would actually be able to describe it. So whilst we can obviously try to intellectually understand these concepts, we're never really going to be able to grasp them with our human brains, put it that way. So how does this model fit in with the idea of the soul on the tree of life? So if we look at Tipperet, which we'll deal with in the future podcast as being the individual soul or the spirit, then Keter and the veils of unmanifestation can be seen as being more sort of universal spirit, so beyond all comprehension. And that is really the ultimate goal of the magician on the return path up the tree of life, but also beyond any comprehension of our logic or, you know, reason. And a good symbol of this process is the Ouroboros, or the symbol of the serpent biting its tail. This is something Blavatsky mentioned in her Secret Doctrine, when she said, "The eternal moment, space, wrapped in her ever-invisible robes, had slumbered once again for seven eternities." And also H.P. Lovecraft in The Call of the Cthulhu wrote, "In his house at Reili, dead Cthulhu waits dreaming." So we can have this idea from these different concepts, really, that, you know, within this, the Ein Sof Aura, there is this limitless potential that is lying there waiting to be awoken. And through the work of the magician, obviously, one becomes closer to it. So in a sense, you could say that we are trying to draw down that force from the veils of the unmanifestation and meet us. We'll talk a bit about some of the correspondences now. So in terms of gods relevant to the Ein Sof, you know, there's various different ones that we can talk about. So one of the obvious ones is Nuit, the Queen of Heaven, which is obviously famous in Liber Al V Legis. Infinite space and the infinite stars thereof, also referred to as the continuous. So it says, "O Nuit, continuous one of heaven, let it ever be thus, that men speak not of thee but as one, but as none, and let them speak not of thee at all, since thou art continuous." So Nuit is obviously both continuous and none. She's also not. So in ancient Egypt, she actually personified the vault of heaven, which represented the kind of great and manifest realm. And it's from the body of Nuit that emerged all of the heavenly bodies. So the stars were her children. And she was also known as the female pig who ate her piglets. So you could see in that sense the idea of the unmanifest consuming the manifest. Again, this harks back to the idea of the Ouroboros, so the snake biting its tail. Another god that is quite relevant to the Ein Sof would be Artem, who is the primary god of Heliopolis. Artem is one of the ones who, essentially he was created alone in the universe, and he copulates with himself and creates Shu, the god of air, and Tufnut, the goddess of moisture. The story of Artem self-emerging from the primeval chaos to bring forth the stuff of the universe is obviously very relevant when we look about the idea about the Ein, and also, you know, if we think about it from the point of view of the Ein Sof, the symbol of an invisible web on which dew or moisture appears. So this is very much that it's creating itself out of nothingness. This is quite well illustrated in Hesiod's Theogony, which is something that Gareth Knight mentioned in his Practical Guide to Kabbalistic Symbolism, when he says, "In the beginning there was chaos, vast and dark. Then appeared Gaia, the deep-breasted earth, and finally Eros, the love which softens hearts, whose fructifying influence would thenceforth preside over the formation of beings and things. From chaos were born Erebus and Night, who uniting gave birth in their turn to Aether, and Chimaera, the day. On her part, Gaia first bore Uranus, the sky crowned with stars, whom she made her equal in grandeur, so that he equally entirely covered her. Then she created the high mountains and Pontus, the sterile sea with its harmonious waves." So as we've seen, the Ein, you know, represents the great unmanifest, this idea of limitless emptiness. But what does that kind of represent to it from the point of view of the magician? Well, if we look at it from the view of the mystic, the Ein is really that kind of deep inner space within ourselves from which all manifestation emerges. And as I've said before, this is beyond our conscious mind and beyond anything that we can fully comprehend using our normal consciousness. And yet it's also something that, you know, in some ways we are aware of. I'm not a huge fan, but Eckhart Tolle likens to sleeping and waking when he says this, and it's quite relevant to what we're talking about. "The coming into manifestation of the world, as well as its return to the unmanifested, its expansion and contraction, are two universal movements that we would call the outgoing and the return home. They are also reflected in the cycles of sleep and wakefulness. Each night, without knowing it, you return to the unmanifested source of all life when you enter the deep stage of dreamless sleep, and then re-emerge again in the morning, replenished." So in some ways, this is what he's talking about here is, you know, we go through this process when we go to sleep, which is almost like a form of death. So you'd go to sleep and the world is reborn when you wake, and consciousness comes back to the living. And when you're asleep, you don't really realize that, you know, the world disappears. So it's very much similar to that. Also, another thought I had on this was the idea of the Siege Perilous, so the empty grail or the empty seat at the table of Camelot. So, you know, both of these things represent the unmanifest and the nothing that lies behind and is also part of all things. Our modern society is heavily focused on, you know, material possessions and titles that feed the egos. However, there is that sort of real stillness that lies within each and every one of us that we can find, and that also taps into that limitless ocean of peace and creativity. And this is well described by William Gray, who's a very famous magician who lived down in Cheltenham. And he said, "We must advance away from the manifest, allowing the God in us to point our pathway. Limitless light being behind us. We must remember that light is invisible. We do not see light, but only what it illuminates. Once we are in the light, we shall be beyond vision. In the words of an old invocation, the state of Ein Sof Aur is likened to a lightless world, yet radiant with light, a soulless world, yet filled with soul. Again, there is a similarity of a light shining backwards, revealing darkness. There is also the description of St. John, light shining in the darkness, yet unknown to the darkness. So, you know, what he's talking about here is that this is this unmanifest power that is invisible, that exists, but also does not exist. So it's a very complicated concept to try and understand, but it is the beginning of what forms the Kabbalistic tree of life. As any artist or, you know, musician would know as well, when we're trying to do something creative, it's often when we don't think that we produce the most profound work. So the act of sort of switching off that monkey brain and sitting in the silence is one of the key things that can enable us to unlock the true meaning of the hermetic phrase "Nothi Sutan," or "Know thyself." It's really that sort of inner silence and creativity that kind of lies beyond our conscious mind, but which we can sometimes tap into, that will give us that first taste of the great unmanifest power of the Ein Sof Aur. So, so just to kind of sum up this podcast, we've nearly kind of finished the debate of it. Obviously, there's lots of different aspects to the Ein Sof Aur, which takes a lot of different study and meditation, and you know, it is an extremely complicated subject to understand. There's a few different ideas that I wanted to mention that Gareth Knight talks about in his Practical Guide to Kabbalistic Symbolism. When trying to sort of contemplate what this is. So one of them is a vacuum of pressure. So remember, one of the descriptions of the divine is pressure. So this would be kind of the opposite of that. Another one would be a limitless ocean of negative light. Another one is nothingness crystallizing a center, and the finally, which we've already mentioned previously, is an invisible web upon which shining dew forms, and the idea of something coming out of nothingness and about forces kind of gathering together and creating and manifesting. So I hope you've enjoyed listening to this. I wanted to finish with a quote from Goethe, which I thought was quite relevant when we're talking about the unmanifest, and it goes like this: "Unwilling, I reveal a loftier mystery. In solitude are thrown the goddesses. No space around them, place and time still less. Only to speak of them embarrasses. They are the mothers. There is no way to the unreachable, never to be trod. A way to the unbeseechable, never to be sought. Naught shalt thou see in endless void afar, nor hear thy footsteps fall, nor meet a stable spot to rest thy feet, escape from the created, to shapeless forms in liberated spaces, enjoy what long ere this was dissipated. At last a blazing tripod tells thee this, that there the deepest bottom is. Its light will then the far mothers show, some in their seats, the others stand or go, at their own will, formation, transformation, the eternal minds, eternal recreation." And that's by Goethe. So thanks very much for joining us on the Occult London podcast this week. I hope you enjoyed it. Please visit our website, which the link is in the show notes, and please feel free to subscribe. You can also, if you've got any comments or ideas, or you'd like to come on the podcast as a guest, then also please reach out to us using the email provided. Thanks very much, and good night.